Samuel.
Cardiovascular number 2.
Woohoo!
Sorry, I've used up all my energy.
Yeah, that's because you've been listening to a Ricky Gervais podcast. I know you.
That doesn't use up a huge amount of energy. Wouldn't our podcast be a lot better, though, if we had Carl Pilkington?
The man. I think he's genius. You think he's a little bit short, don't you?
A little bit short?
Yeah.
Or genius?
Yeah. I think he's brilliant. I think so funny.
His brain works very differently to everybody else's, which makes him so interesting.
Yeah, and geniuses have that kind of brain? Okay, maybe. I like him.
Geniuses are capable of higher thought processes, probably.
Yeah, he's a little bit whacked out on some of his theories of evolution and, you know, population control and things like that, but very, very entertaining.
He thinks a lot. He just often doesn't quite get it. But then Ricky Gervais is very, very good. But sometimes Carl's right and Ricky's wrong.
I like it when Ricky Gervais laughs, because his laugh is like this kind of maniacal kind of shrieking, like he can't believe what's coming out of Carl's mouth.
Yeah, it's very, very good to listen to.
Anyway, so yeah, listen to those after your exams or something.
Go to rickygervais.com or search iTunes for Ricky Gervais and listen to the genius that is Carl Pilkington.
There you go. Nice little ad there.
Do you reckon we can ask the school manager if they'd stump up funds for the guest Carl Pilkington?
Oh, that would be so good.
That'd be awesome.
But no, I doubt it very much.
Yeah, his views on, his thoughts of evolution and biology are fascinating.
Science fiction, I'd say. Anyway, enough of that.
Let's get back into Scott Sigler territory, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I love him too. Anyway.
Okay, so, right. What are we doing today? This is cardiovascular number 2, because this is episode 11 of the Sam and Ree Show. Embryology with Sam and Ree.
Yep.
But it's the second of the 3 cardiovascular podcasts that we're going to do.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of interest.
Requests.
Hassle.
Yeah.
Which is good, because it shows these podcasts are well used and that you guys like them and that they're helpful, which is why we're doing them. So that's good. I think it's cut down on the number of tutorials this year.
Definitely.
Which is good.
So today we're going to do the heart, basically, aren't we?
But yeah, so we did the blood vessels last time. We're going to do the heart, which is number 2. And we've already recorded a podcast with Geraint Morris about the changes to the circulation at birth.
We'll pop that one in the end.
And that'll link nicely into the blood vessels podcast and this one, hopefully. So that's already done. So if we do this one, can we have a bit of a break? Because we've rattled out, 4 podcasts in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, actually, we've done quite well. But we did want to get this done before everyone's exams and stuff, so...
Yeah.
You know, pat on the back for both of us, I think.
It's hard work, this. It's helping my embryology.
Yeah.
It's hard,
no, definitely,
trying to work out how to pull this across.
Definitely. It's helping my embryology, no end.
So we'll have a bit of a break after this one, then.
Okay, deal.
Maybe we'll learn about neuroembryology.
Oy.
Well, next term head neck anatomy, so might be a good time to relearn our neuroembryology.
I think I'll have to build myself up for that.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so today, should we get on to today's stuff?
Well, you know, if you're entirely ready.
I don't know. Are you entirely ready?
Yeah. This is going to be a real shared effort. I'll do bits, you do bits.
Okay.
But the structure is going to be... well, we talked about blood vessels, didn't we, in the cardiogenic region, and that the heart starts from a simple tube.
Yep.
So we'll start there-ish. We'll talk about that tube and how it loops. And then we need to talk about the coronary vessels, probably, the coronary arteries and the veins. And then probably the most crucial part is the septa, how the heart is then, the simple tube is divided up into essentially 4 chambers.
Easy.
Easy. It is. It's straightforward until you start looking at the detail. Then it gets confusing. Yeah. If you look at it, we'll try and present not a bit more than an overview, but we'll try and present it in at the level that's useful. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, like we said, the heart stops from a tube. Whereas actually, we mentioned in the last podcast that there's endocardial tubes that are ventral in the embryo, about neck region, didn't we say? So.
Yes, and do you remember what the tube forms from?
Mesenchyme, is that what you mean?
Yeah, well, mesoderm, and the blood islands, and the endothelium.
Blood islands.
But yeah, because students always ask, you know, is it endoderm, ectoderm, mesoderm, or is it mesoderm?
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So the cardiogenic area, tube forming in that region, and there is a bit of movement up and down, isn't there? But we'll skip over that.
Yeah, and so at this stage, our endocardial, like, heart tube is basically, it's got endothelia inside, doesn't it, lining it, and it's also got some myocardium around as well.
And that's what makes it different to the other blood vessels. That's what makes it the future heart, is that it has some cells which have differentiated differently to become cardiac cells. So they are myocardial cells. They're the cardiac muscle cells of the future. Do you want me to shut the window?
Yeah, it's a bit noisy. Hold on a sec. Okay.
So I'll have the sound effect of me walking across the room.
Okay, so we've got this... We've got this heart tube, and it's actually attached. So, you know, so certain things get attached in the body to stop them all moving around when everything else is developing. So the mesocardium attaches dorsally the heart tube that's developing.
Yes, we looked at the gut tube, didn't we?
In the inventory.
So the gut's hanging off the back, and the liver develops in a ventral mesogastrium, a ventral sheet of connective tissue. And the heart, again, is held in place just by a dorsal sheet of connective tissue.
Called the mesocardium. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it's held in this position to keep it also within the pericardial cavity.
Yeah, so that's the space that the heart's developing in there, in the pericardial cavity.
Cool.
Okay, so what happens to the mesocardium then, the dorsal mesocardium?
Breaks down?
Yeah, it breaks down, doesn't it? So that the heart is then attached at the top and the bottom. And there's a space all the way around it.
Yeah,
so that space then is a pericardial sinus. Just a couple of other terms which you might see. And then we have this tube, and the venous input is coming into the bottom. So the caudal part of the heart tube, that's where the blood's coming in. So all those veins we spoke about, the vitelline veins, the cardinal veins, and the umbilical veins.
Pouring blood into there.
Coming in the bottom. And then at the top is the arterial output, so the blood's going out there, into the first aortic arch and out then to the dorsal aorta on the left and the right.
Cool.
And that's the flow. And then the blood's going around the embryo and placenta and vitelline veins and the vitelline circulation and so on and so on.
That works out quite well, really. The heart actually starts beating at about 22 days, I read.
Yeah.
Quite impressive when you think about that.
Yeah, it's surprising how early many tissues are actually functioning because the heart is very visibly functioning when it's working. See these cells beating.
Yeah. Excellent. So now we've got a heart tube.
What happens then?
It has to fold.
Yeah, so the myocardium starts to thicken up.
Okay.
If we're talking about the pericardium, we should talk about
pericardial
sinus.
Yeah, let's mention that
area. So we've got the endothelium in the middle of the tube. We've got the myocardium. That starts to thicken. That's going to be the muscle. And then some of the mesothelial cells, so the mesoderm cells lining the space of the
body cavity,
the body cavity, are going to differentiate and start to form the epicardium. So then we're going to have the three layers. We'll have the endocardium, the myocardium, and the epicardium. And the epicardium is, it's the visceral pericardium.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay, so, that's nice, isn't it? Already we can see three layers of the heart, and it's still pretty much a simple tube. But then you wanted to say that it loops. Yeah, so from about day 23 and the following
about 23 days, it starts to bend.
It starts to lengthen and fold. So what happens then? We call this the cardiac loop, don't we? What are the changes there?
Okay, well, basically, as I understand it, it folds in two ways, essentially. We get a bulboventricular fold and an atrioventricular fold. Before we do talk about the folds, we should talk about the shape that the heart the parts of the heart tube has.
Okay, yeah, because it's also getting shape at this stage, isn't it?
So we're getting distinguishing factors. Yeah, so if we start where the blood comes in, okay, so it's coming in, so that's going to be a venous, derivative. So we've got the sinus venosus.
Okay? Starts at the bottom.
Yeah, starting at the bottom, blood coming in, sinus venosus. Then we come up and it changes its name to the primitive atria. Okay.
Yep.
And then it goes into the primitive ventricle.
Yep.
Further up into something called the bulbous cordis.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then before the blood comes out, the last thing it travels through is the truncus arteriosus.
Cool.
Okay, and then, because that
you
helps...
directly relate those bits to future adult parts of the heart.
Exactly. And also that helps us when we look about the heart tube folding, because bulboventricular groove, well, what's that going to be between the bulbous cordis and the primitive ventricle? That's
right.
Easy.
Okay,
yeah. Atrioventricular groove is going to be between the primitive ventricles and atria, you see? So they're the specific points that it bends.
So from what you've said then, the atria, or the atrium, is beneath the ventricle.
Yeah.
Ah.
I know.
Which isn't what we have in the adult, is it?
No, and then because that's when everything all folds up on itself, and we get something a little bit closer to adult structure.
So it folds and flops, flops forward. That's a good image.
Yeah.
So the atria or the atrium, they're going to become kind of two spaces which aren't really divided. So we might call them atrium or atria.
Yeah.
But the atria then kind of go dorsal and up. They go dorsally.
Yeah, superior or posterior.
And cranially. So it, as kind of the middle bit of the heart tube flops forward, the atrium rises up posteriorly. And the bit that's flopped forward then is the ventricle.
Yes.
It starts to look a little bit more adulty. We've got the ventricle, anterior and inferior, or ventral and caudal. And we've got the atrium, mind on. We've got the atria then, posterior and superior, or in the embryo we might say ventral and cranial.
Oh. Look at a picture.
That might have helped. That might have confused.
Okay.
Okay, so that's basically what we mean by the cardiac looping.
Okay, right? And the heart has to loop because it's kept within the pericardial cavity, and there's not enough space for it because it's elongating. So basically that's sort of one of the reasons that we initiate the folding. Cool.
Yeah, okay.
Fit it all in.
Sweet.
Okay, now what?
That's the tube and the looping.
Yeah.
So next we said we were going to talk about the coronary vessels.
Oh, yeah.
If I talk about the sinus venosus first, that relates well to the blood vessels we spoke about last time.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got those three pairs of veins coming into the bottom of the heart, the vitelline veins, the cardinal veins, and the umbilical veins. And those are going to form the parts of the superior vena cava and the inferior vena cava. But they're also going to, as they push up and things start to degenerate and change shape and so on, they're also going to form the coronary sinus. So that's where the coronary vessels, the coronary veins, are going to drain blood back into the adult atrium.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And this is going to form kind of the smooth part of the right atrium and the valves, if you like, of the IVC and the SVC, the end of the right atrium.
Okay.
All that stuff there is going to come from the sinus venosus.
Right.
The sinus venosus is basically all of the veins coming together at the bottom of the heart into the atrium of the embryological heart. Do you want to talk about the coronary arteries then?
Okay, coronary arteries, because I quite like those, okay? Coronary arteries develop from two sources. We've got the angioblasts, which migrate from elsewhere. They include neural crest cells, okay? And we've also got epicardial cells that are involved in making these coronary arteries. And what happens is these cells aggregate, they come together. The epicardial cells transfer back to a kind of mesenchyme, okay? Because remember, they're going to make connective tissues and blood vessels. They all come from mesenchymal origin, okay? So those cells do that. They form these blood vessels, and then these coronary arteries invade the aorta. They grow, they physically grow into the aorta to then get the blood from it to supply the heart. How cool is that?
Quite the opposite of what you'd expect.
Yeah.
You'd expect angiogenesis to take them out of the aorta.
Yeah.
But that's not true, you say.
I know.
Funky.
I know, it's cool, that bit. Okay, thank you for that. Next.
Yeah, so that's the coronary vessels done.
Sweet.
Just about 15 minutes in.
Oh, we're flying today.
Doing well. But now we've got the big chunk. We've got the septa.
Yeah, okay.
So we've got kind of the shape of the adult heart almost, but we've got the blood essentially flowing through one tube.
Yeah.
Now we've got to split that tube up. We've got to split the atrium from the ventricle, or the atria from the ventricles, and we've got to split the atria into left and right.
And the ventricles.
We've got to split the ventricles.
Yeah, okay. Quite a lot to do.
How does that happen?
Okay.
What should we do first?
I think
that's a trick with the order.
Well, I reckon we should do atrial ventricular and then the aorticopulmonary. Yeah, or not?
Sounds good.
There's those three, and then we'll look at valves and stuff.
So should we split the atria off from the ventricles first?
Okay.
And then we'll talk about... Is that what you meant?
No, I meant split the atria first. But
okay, let's split the atrium first.
Okay.
Because that's nice.
Yeah, so currently the blood can just flow straight across from the right atria to the left, yeah?
Yeah, and we've got a number of blood vessels going into the atria and coming off the ventricles. So, yeah, okay. The blood flow is quite different to the adult.
Yeah.
So when the atria start to get split, there's a growth of the wall from the top of the atrium to the bottom, splitting into two cavities. But there's always a hole between the two. So this is the septum primum. It grows down from the top, from the roof, down to the bottom. And the hole that's beneath it, as it's growing down, is called the ostium primum. As it reaches the bottom, a hole starts to form in the top of the septum primum. You've got a little fenestration, little holes, which become a bigger hole.
Yeah.
And that's the ostium secundum.
Yeah.
So blood can always flow from the right side to the left side.
Yep.
From the right atrium to the left atrium.
Yep.
Yeah, that septum is never completely separating the two in embryonic or fetal life.
Yeah. Right, okay. So we've got the septum primum with the hole, the septum secundum in it.
The ostium secundum.
Oh, yeah, sorry. The ostium secundum, you're right. And then on the right-hand side of the septum primum grows the septum secundum. Okay? So we've got a whole separate
Why
septum.
Why on earth would you grow a second septum when you've already got a perfectly good one?
Genius, this is. There is also a hole left in the septum secundum, and this hole is called the foramen ovale. The septum primum on the left-hand side and the septum secundum on the right-hand side, okay? Now, there is still the flow of blood can come from the right-hand side to left. It can still go through, and it has to go through the two, the foramen ovale and the ostium secundum. And what actually happens is that the septum primum becomes the valve for the foramen ovale, and at birth, when the pressure changes to increase on the left hand side, this pushes the septum primum closing the foramen ovale, and then it eventually grows and becomes fixed, and we call it the fossa ovalis in the heart.
Okay, So the septum secundum and the septum primum work together to form a little flappy valve.
Basically.
Allowing blood to flow from the right to the left atria.
Yeah.
So we can bypass the lungs, as we spoke about last time. And all of these little bits we've spoken about, the septum primum, septum secundum, ostium secundum, and so on and so on, the whole structure there is then the foramen ovale.
Yeah.
And fossa ovale in most of us adults.
Yeah, so that's...
And you can still see that if you look at an adult heart.
Yeah.
Get your thumb in there.
So that is how the atria split.
Clear as mud.
Okay, so let's do... What do you want to do, the ventricles?
Well, should we then split the ventricles, or should we split the atria from the ventricles?
I'd like to split the ventricles.
Let's split the ventricles, because that's easy.
Ish, yeah. Oh, well, actually it is, because we've got the ventricles, so they're at the bottom of the heart now. And the interventricular septum essentially just grows up from the bottom.
Yeah. So we say ventricles, so we've kind of got these two separate sacs, but they're not properly separated yet in the midline. They're still linked, but they're two ventricles because they're two sacky. If you can see what I was doing with my hands right now, it makes complete sense.
That's not going to help anybody.
But you've got two sacs, which are ventricles, and they're going to get split.
Yeah.
So they get bigger, and then in the midline, you kind of get the muscular growth.
Yes.
Coming up from the bottom upwards.
Yeah.
Starting to split the left and right ventricles.
Yeah. And the intraventricular septum actually has two parts. It has the muscular part, and that's the bit that we've talked about that's growing from the bottom up. And it also has a membranous part, which very conveniently ties in with the third septum that we're going to talk about.
Yes. The endocardial cushions, which are going to separate off the atria from the ventricles.
Yeah.
So from there, there's a little bit of growth, which is the membranous part of the interventricular septum, which grows down to meet the muscular part and will completely separate the right and left ventricles.
Yeah.
Up until that point, there's a little hole there, though.
Yeah.
Which is the interventricular foramen. Which makes sense if you think about it.
Yes.
So again, there's a little bit of, there's a link between left and right until those have grown together.
Yeah, so it's quite straightforward, really, that one.
Right, and so we need to talk about how those atria get split from the ventricles then.
Okay.
But they don't get completely split, do they? There are holes in the middle, as we know.
Yes, because we have valves there called different things for the left and right.
Yes, well, our ultimate aim then is to send blood from the right atrium into the right ventricle and out, and then into the left atrium through to the left ventricle and out.
Yeah.
Right, how are we going to do that then?
Okay, well, we have what we call atrioventricular canals that need to form, okay? So you mentioned endocardial cushions. Do you want to talk about a little bit more about those?
Yeah, we can stick up a diagram for this as well. But if we have this canal linking the atrial space to the ventricular space, the walls of that canal start to push together. So we have endocardial cushions. Now, the endocardial cushions on the superior wall and the inferior wall push together to split into left and right.
So we've had a common atrioventricular canal, and then we need to make two, so that's why.
Yeah. So front and back, superior and inferior, just because of the way the heart is led, but it's kind of anterior and posterior. You might want to think of it like that. The walls push together and meet to give two canals left and right. And then on top of that, a little bit later, two lateral endocardial cushions on the left and right side start to push in as well. And what we have then is we have, as you said, one canal, and then we have two canals after the endocardial and atrioventricular cushions have pushed together to form two lumens.
I see. So, and those two canals that form, they end up having the bicuspid, tricuspid valves. Am I right?
Yes, we've got a hole on the right and a hole on the left.
Yeah.
And there are proliferations of the mesenchymal tissue, so the connective tissue there, which start to form valve structures. And those bits of tissue start to get thin, so they become more valve-like, which may be due to the blood flow or for some other reason.
I think it is. Blood flow is important.
Yeah. They're then attached to the heart wall by cords, first muscular cords, then connective tissue cords, and the papillary muscles and what have you. So those are the cordy, tendony, and papillary muscles.
So that's essentially how that forms?
Yeah, so we get the bicuspid and tricuspid valves. Which way around are they?
If you try hard enough, you might just get it right. Try right side.
I thought if you're a really bad speller, tricuspid, you could rearrange the letters of try to make right, well, writ. Like I said, my brain is a bit different.
Like I said, if you try hard enough, you might just get it right. Good. So
I'll never remember that. Try hard enough, you might just get
this
it right.
This lot will, no
try
problems.
Try hard enough, you might just get it right.
Right, okay. So we've done the atrial division, we've done the ventricular division, we've looked at the valves. What else do we need to look at?
Well, there's also a splitting of the great vessels as they come out of the ventricles.
Yes, there is. Yes, the truncus arteriosus.
Yeah, it starts off as one tube, and we've split the ventricles into two, but we've got to split the truncus arteriosus, this originally one single large vessel, into the two vessels that leave the left and right ventricles.
The aorta and the pulmonary trunk, sorry.
Yeah. No, go on. Okay, do you want to do that?
I can do a little bit of that if you like. It happens quite early on. It's in the fifth week. But basically...
Yeah, all of these processes are pretty much occurring together, aren't they?
They are simultaneous.
Yeah, so this is one of the later ones, probably.
Basically, in the truncus arteriosus, we form ridges or swellings, if you like, on the inside of the wall. They're called bulbar ridges. They come together. They also get a bit of input from neural crest cell migration as well, which is quite just an interesting
neural
point.
Neural crest cell.
Get everywhere.
Multi-purpose.
Yeah.
Swiss Army knife.
So we get our bulbar ridges forming, and we also get truncal ridges. They're the same thing. It's just forming on the inside of these this truncus arteriosus.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
They form, they fuse, they go through a 180 rotation, so they end up being spiraled.
It's a lovely spiral shape.
Yeah. So when they fuse, they end up being the aortico-pulmonary septum. And so then that means the division is aorta and pulmonary trunk.
We get two vessels from one.
Yeah. And because of this 180, this twisting rotation spiral kind of shape that we see, that's why in the resulting adult, we have that kind of twisting of the pulmonary trunk around the aorta. Clever, eh? Yeah. And also, another little point on this is that the inferior end of this septum, this aortico-pulmonary septum, also merges with the membranous part of the intraventricular septum that we saw before.
Tidy.
That's it?
Yeah, that's nice. We've split it up.
Cool.
Okay, so that's the development of the heart.
I think that's all right.
Usual time there with 26 odd minutes.
Excellent.
Okay, so that's it. We've done a lot of podcasts recently. Can we have a bit of a break now?
Yeah, definitely. We'll put Geraint's on the end of this.
Geraint is recorded, So we'll put that up as well. Bear in mind the holes we've been talking about and the links between the left and the right sides of the heart and the blood flow and the blood vessels. And Geraint and I will talk about all the clinical aspects of that and
how that changes at birth.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? And we'll go and read about neuroembryology.
Oh, don't. It's giving me a headache already.
Oh, headache.
Just quickly, what are we going to do about pharyngeal arches and endocrine and stuff?
Well, there already exists a couple of podcasts about endocrine embryology and development of the pharyngeal arches and what they do.
Mm.
But if we find time in the future, we'll record them again together.
With me.
We could give you a little tutorial.
Yeah, no, okay,
we could discuss it. So we could do those again. But I don't think we'll hurry to do those. I think we've covered all of the areas we wanted to cover by the time of the exams, either in the old format or the new format.
I wonder who I can get to do my part of neuroembryology.
It's not... I mean, if you think it's neural tube, that's all right. And then there's some brain cavities and folding and swelling and stuff.
Like I said, bit more work involved.
Read the textbooks.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Ree.
Thank you very much. Bye, everyone.
Fish bash box.
Thank you very much.
Sure.